Welcome to Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for spending some of your time with us today. And we've got lots for you on the program today. We begin the show by talking about keeping your annuals healthy right through the growing season. And a great guest for you, Lindsay Hendricks, back with us. Lindsay is the horticulture manager at the Green Bay Botanical Garden, and she will also fill us in on what's happening at the garden, including an exhibit from the Washed Ashore Project, something you're going to want to take a look at. It's amazing. So as we start here, are you having problems with your annuals? Do you need a plant suggestion maybe for a container? What other gardening questions do you have? Give us a call. The number, 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And Lindsay Hendricks, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having me back.
You know, we were originally going to ask you to talk about how you switch out the summer annuals for fall, but you told Jill Nadeau that you don't have to do that anymore. Why not?
Yeah, we used to swap our containers and some of our displays out for mums and other fall annuals, but with, you know, the climate these days, our season has actually been like extended. July, August, September, even parts of October has still been like really warm, and sometimes we haven't been getting a hard frost until like middle to end October. So our annuals, especially like our tropicals, are usually in their prime, their peak, by the time we would be ripping them out. So we kind of decided, why would we want to like destroy our beautiful annual displays and our containers just to put in like a couple little mums that are only going to last for like a week or so. So we try to incorporate now some season long interest into all of our designs and containers. So we will have stuff blooming into fall. So we don't have to spend the time and money to change everything out, because that's a lot of work.
Yeah, that's kind of what I do too. You know, you try and have some kind of fallish type plants in there the whole season. I've got, I don't know how many, 14 or 15 containers.
Wow, around. A lot.
Yeah, it's a lot to take care of. What are some of your favorites at the botanical garden this year?
For like just our general annuals that we have, or
yeah,
ones that can... Okay, well, we have a lot of our big tropical plants that we overwinter every year. We have like a lot of really great cannas that are kind of coming into their own now. We've had a lot of really warm days lately, and you know, been getting quite a bit of rain. So those guys are really taking off. We have some really cool, unique elephant ears throughout the garden. One of Mark's favorite is called Waikiki. It's got a really cool coloration on it, some white and purples. We have a lot of really cool annual plants. You know, it's really hard, Larry, just to pick a couple that are our favorites, because, I mean, a lot of them are, but our horticulture team did a really great job of designing their beds this year, and I love each one for different reasons and all the plants that are in them. So we just encourage everyone to come in and check it out and see what their favorite is.
Do you have some, you know, now you've got these annuals, they're in for a longer period of time. Do you have some tips for making those annuals look good, look better through the year?
Yeah, for sure. Well, you definitely want to make sure your in-ground plants or even containers are getting an inch of water a week, especially for annuals, to keep them kind of going through their life cycle. We used to fertilize our annual display beds weekly, bi-weekly, with like the Miracle-Gro, the little blue packets you put in your water container, but that took a lot of time. So we actually transitioned to fertilizing our annuals with a slow release fertilizer like Osmocoat. So we sprinkle that in around the plants when they're planted, and then every time we water, every time it rains, they get a little bit of nutrition, so they get bigger faster, look great longer. But we've noticed some of ours are still a little behind right now in some areas. So what we did today, this week actually, is we went around with Osmocote again and kind of sprinkled it around some of our plants that were still a little small, to give them a little extra kick in the butt to keep going for the next couple months. But deadheading your annuals and even perennials will help extend their bloom and keep them looking good so they're not trying to produce seed, which usually signals it's time for them to stop, you know, growing. So you can do deadheading, keeping them watered, fertilize them, you know, whichever method works best for you. And just watching out for any plant diseases or insect pests that might be kind of hanging out by your plants and, you know, take care of those accordingly, depending on, you know, what you have going on.
Yeah. How's the season overall shaping up in the Green Bay area? It sounds like you're getting enough rain.
Yeah, we kind of had a slow start to our spring. It was a little wonky, you know, warmed up, and then it got cold again for a while. So some of our stuff kind of slowed down. But I think now everything's pretty close to on schedule of where it typically is. We did, however, notice, as I think a lot of other gardeners did, lost quite a few plants this year because of the winter we had with the lack of snow cover for a while and then those really cold temperatures. So it seemed like a lot of our Mediterranean type plants, lamb's ear, lady's mantle, lavender, a whole bunch of the plants with the silvery foliage, like, just kind of disappeared this winter. So, you know, that's been kind of interesting for us because we've had to fill those gaps with, you know, different plants this year. But, you know, it's just an opportunity to, you know, try something new. But, you know, a couple of us had, like, I had a really awesome lavender patch going around the cottage garden. And, you know, everyone used to love to take pictures of it. In the spring, I was planting some of my annuals. I'm like, where the heck did all that lavender go? Well, it all got killed off by the winter. So I was a little sad about that, but it's okay. We had other plants to go there. So, you know, I think we're pretty much on course. The rain has really helped us to not have to water so much. But we're still working on getting all of our weeds taken care of because, you know, those will grow pretty much no matter what. So,
yeah, that's weeds are a problem. I've had street work done in front of my house. And so between the sidewalk and the street, I had about 20 feet or so of perennials and some annuals in there too, and they were looking really good, and then unbeknownst to me the street people took out all but about 4 feet of them. And I wish they'd let me know in advance. It was just before the 4th of July weekend. I would have spent the weekend, you know, digging a lot of those plants up. But it given that, and then the rest of the plantings on my side of the sidewalk have gotten weedy, and I was spending time last night doing a little weeding, but it's kind of discouraging when something like that happens.
Yeah, for sure. I'd totally be bummed. But as I tell our garden staff and our volunteers, you know, all the weeds is just job security for us. So we will not run out of things to do for our staff or our volunteers. So not that we like to keep weeds around, but we definitely, you know, we'll always have something to, I guess, keep working on.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we've had hot temperatures in our part of the state. They've been all over the state. Any negative impacts that you see as the result of the hot temperatures?
We haven't really noticed a ton yet at the garden. Like some of our, as some of our staff call the drama queen plants that like to wilt as soon as it gives above like 80 degrees just because they're hot. A little bit of that going on, but we haven't seen a ton at the garden, but I know feedback from garden guests and some of our volunteers is, you know, with the warmer heat, even though we've been getting rain, like a lot of trees and even shrubs can start getting stressed out. So we've heard, you know, in the area, there's been a couple trees, maples specifically, that are already starting to turn red just because even though they've been getting rain, but it's, you know, hotter than they would like. So You know, if anyone sees that going on at their home, you know, they can just give those plants when it's really hot, maybe a little extra supplemental water just to keep them a little happier. But, you know, sometimes when Mother Nature does her thing, you know, we can't really do a whole lot about it. We just have to kind of deal with, you know, what's going on. So nothing too crazy yet. You know, our staff, we've been trying to like keep them hydrated, you know, if they need to take extra breaks. If the heat index gives above 95, we try to get everyone inside, you know, just to keep our staff safe. But yeah, I mean, everything, the tropicals and a lot of our annuals are really actually appreciating the heat that we've been having because they're just going crazy growing now. So getting nice and big.
Yeah, the tropicals, I love it. These are the plants that we usually see as houseplants, right?
Yeah, there's what we call tropicals are basically anything that we grow in the garden that is not hardy to Wisconsin or, I mean, Green Bay right now, which I think we're now around like a zone 5. That you would have to dig up for the winter and can store. So we have a lot of canna lilies, different elephant ear types, lots of dahlias, and a whole bunch of other little like summer blooming bulbs that are pretty easy to overwinter in our shop dormant. So those are the ones that really like it really hot and really humid. So they've really been taking off.
Yeah. How do you use them and or position them sort of in the garden to kind of show them off or work well with other plants?
Yeah, so we have a big list that we keep every year, every fall when we, you know, take down the gardens for the year, and we'll list all the different varieties that we have, about how many we have, and then when our horticulture team are designing their annual display beds for the upcoming season, they will look at that list and kind of know what we have and can plan around it. So a lot of those big tropical plants, as we call them, you know, those are going to be your really big thriller plants, the ones that get really big. So you can either use them as the focal point in your display bed or your flower pot, or you can use them to kind of create a screen between two different areas and plant around them, or kind of use them on the sides to kind of like wall in a certain area. So it kind of depends on your overall like theme and, you know, look of the area, but those big tropicals are usually our big like focal points that take a little bit to get going, but by this time in the season they're, you know, in their prime, and, you know, really stealing the show. A lot of cannas, we have a Pretoria one, it's called, it's kind of like a green and gold stripe. We like it because it's like Packer-esque, you know, with the green and gold colors. So that's a really nice one that really has a nice pop of color against pretty much any greenery that we have.
Lindsay Hendricks, our guest today, horticulture manager at the Green Bay Botanical Garden. Horticulture, what's the official title now? Is it the Green Bay Horticultural Garden? I've always called it the Green Bay Botanical Garden.
I'm pretty sure it's still the Green Bay Botanical Garden.
Okay.
We just redid our logo, but I don't think we changed our name.
Okay. Anyway, Lindsay's the manager, the horticulture manager of the Green Bay Botanical Garden. She's here to answer your questions as we talk plants with her, and I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on WPR News. You're listening to Garden Talk here on WPR News. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Lindsay Hendricks, the horticulture manager at the Green Bay Botanical Garden. Great to have her back. And again, questions for her? I hope you'll join in. How are your plants doing? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234 or email us. Email address, talk@WPR.org. Emily emailed us from Chicago. She has a baby weeping Japanese maple, and she'd like to stake it to encourage it to grow taller before it weeps over. But she's heard that staking trees for too long can cause weak growth and can wound the bark. She's assuming she doesn't have it, leave it tied for several years. It will take to grow a few feet taller. What do you think?
Well, if I, I guess if you have something that's weeping and you want it to be tall, my first inclination would be to buy something that wasn't weeping. But I know sometimes they look cool and you just want to get them like just above the thing that's there in front of. So, I mean, we've done it here at the garden with some of our, I think they're like weeping beech trees that we have that are really cool, like purple color, but we want to get them going a little bit more upright before they really start weeping. So it's definitely fine to stake it. Just be very careful when you're doing so you don't snap branches off, because typically like Japanese maples are very slow growers. But when you are like attaching the tree to the stake, make sure that you're using a material that is, you know, flexible and not going to rub on the bark. So here at the garden, we used to use like old pantyhose or any sort. You can buy a lot of materials on Amazon now that are soft for plants, and tie it tight enough so it's held in the position you want, but not so tight that it's going to constrict the bark right away. But what I would also suggest is checking and moving the whatever sort of bandage or string you're using to attach to stake up your tree. I'm sorry, you know, adjust it along the bark or the stem, main trunk of your tree. I'm sorry. So it's not leaving a mark on the bark. So as long as you're kind of moving it around so the bark isn't growing into whatever you're tying your tree to the stake, you know, that will be okay. And then after a couple years, once it's kind of going the direction you want it to, you can take it off and kind of see what happens. So I do have an apple tree on the side of the cottage garden that's espaliered. So it's, you know, pleached against the side of the building. And I do have some wires wrapped around those branches to hold them in place. But when I'm doing my pruning every winter, I take those wires off and I readjust them onto a different part of the branch. So that way you're not going to girdle the stems that are being attached to those supports. So can definitely be done. Just be careful and make sure to use a flexible material to tie the branch or the main stalk to the stake that you use, and keep an eye on it so it doesn't rub through the bark.
Yeah, all good advice. Let's take a call from Lori in Stevens Point. Hi, Lori.
Hi, Larry. I planted snapdragons in a southern exposure planter that gets lots of sunlight, no shade, and I have fertilized them and staked them up, and they are not doing well. Any suggestions to encourage them? I've pruned them back, and they're bushing out, but I'm not getting any blooms. I don't know if snapdragons are not an appropriate annual to put in a planter, or if the guest has suggestions for an annual or a perennial that would be do better getting all that sun and heat.
Yeah, so the thing about snapdragons and most varieties that are probably out in the nursery industry for, you know, people to buy tend to be more of a cool season loving plant. So they're really great in spring containers, early summer containers when the temperatures are a little bit lower. But once it starts getting hot and humid and the days get longer, that kind of signals to those snapdragons to stop blooming. So they're trying to save up energy. They just don't like it really hot. So what they're probably doing right now is, it sounds like you're doing everything right. You're like watering them, fertilizing them, pruning back, staking them up. I would just be patient with them, because once it starts cooling off, I know here up in Green Bay, the last couple of days have been, the mornings have been like high 50s, and then it eventually warms up, you know, the end of the day. But once the nights start cooling down a bit, that will signal those snapdragons to start producing flower buds again. So if you leave them in, they will probably start blooming again closer to late summer, early fall. There are some varieties of snapdragons that are more heat tolerant. I can't think of the specific examples right now, unfortunately, but if you go online and just, you know, Google heat tolerant snapdragons, I think the we have 20 peach in the 20 series or double shot series. It's an All-America selection winner that we have a couple plants here at the garden, and those have been blooming throughout the summer. So it kind of depends on the variety of snapdragon. Some are more heat tolerant than others, but if you have no shade, lots of sun, southern exposure, I would probably suggest something for next year. You know, like petunias, lantana, those can provide lots of color, but aren't bothered by the heat. Different types of salvia. You know, there's probably a lot of things that would do well, honestly, but the snapdragons I'd probably keep for like a spring container or one that maybe gets a little more shade so they don't get so stressed out.
Good advice again, Lori. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Joe in Wisconsin Dells sent us an email. He has black locust trees in his yard, and they only shade the garden in the late evening, but he's having problems with the roots. 4 inches down, he runs into the thick roots, and then a new sapling appears a few days later. He writes here, I'm kind of quoting him, "Is there anything I can do about these trees that appear to be diamond-coated, spread like mint, and have thorns like razor wire? Or is it just best to change my name and start over in a new town where no one knows me?" Oh, I love that.
Oh, so I'm assuming he's just concerned with it kind of spreading and suckering all over.
Yeah, that's the way it sounds.
Yeah, I mean, we have a couple here at the garden that thankfully haven't gone crazy, but I mean, it is kind of annoying when they send up all those suckers, literally suckers, you know, and then you have to kind of take care of them. So I don't think there's really a whole lot that you can do to prevent that from happening, unfortunately. Like, I know if you're digging around the base of the tree a lot and disturbing the roots, that's just going to encourage them to probably keep suckering because that root's damaged. So it's kind of like, oh, I need to like start growing another tree so I don't die. So you're almost like stimulating it to do it more if you're digging around underneath the tree a lot. So typically when you have a nice big tree, try to avoid digging into the root zone, just not to stress it out more. So or you can just plant a ground cover underneath it that really likes to go and you don't have to do much with. You know, lamium I know can pretty much grow everywhere and anywhere, and you can just let it go and don't have to dig it up much. But then that creates its own problem when it starts spreading to other areas of the garden that you don't want it. So I don't want to tell you to go change your name and, you know, move and all that stuff, but you know, you definitely don't want to like apply any herbicide or anything to those little suckers that come up though, because they're literally attached to your main tree. And if you start applying herbicide to kind of keep them knocked back, you're going to start affecting your tree. And then, you know, it might eventually like go downhill and die. So, yeah, I guess it's probably more of a personal preference, but maybe stop digging around underneath it so much. And then the suckering will hopefully slow down, and then just try to get something underneath it that can just grow and be left alone for a while.
And in case Joe wants to take a saw or a chainsaw to the base of the tree, he's got an area in his yard that is full sun. Well, he gets shade in the late evening. What would be an alternative tree that's something sized like a black locust that might not give him so many problems?
Well, we kind of tend to go towards like the native route of trees just because of the ecological benefit for all the insects and birds. You know, there's a lot of really nice cultivars of maple trees now, you know, that can give you fall color. So I know the locusts, they turn the pretty yellow in the fall, but they have all those little leaves that get all over the place. So, you know, maple leaves aren't as big. You can still get a lot of them, but you can get a lot of different pretty colors. And depending on the size of your yard, you know, there's different varieties that will maybe stay a little bit smaller, not grow so fast. So That would probably be one that I would suggest. There's also a lot of like ornamental, if you want something that has more seasonal interests, like blooms, different crab apples, magnolias that can grow, which shouldn't do a lot as far as like suckering or anything like that either. So I guess it kind of depends if you're looking for something more ornamental with like flowers or just like a nice big tree that's going to give you some color in the fall. So I always push towards native trees or varieties of native trees just because typically don't have to worry about them becoming invasive down the road. And they have a great benefit for wildlife, you know, insects and birds and everything that might use the tree to live.
Makes good sense. I've got an email from Monica. She has many rose plants in her containers this year. She'd like to plant them in her garden before winter. When should she make that move?
Well, if you, I guess if they're just the rose by itself in containers, and you don't have to worry about trying to, you know, take apart a whole annual planter and save the roses, you can pretty much plant them whenever you want. I would, I guess, maybe watch the weather. If we're going to be getting into some more like hot spells yet, I would maybe wait until it cools off a little bit more reliably, because it can be a little bit of a shock to your roses to plant them in the ground, and then it gets really dry and hot. They don't get as much water as they want. But typically, like through August and even into September, you could probably do that. But if you want to give them the best chance of kind of reestablishing themselves in the ground, you know, I would probably do it sooner rather than later. But then also, depending on the variety of roses you have, and I don't know them all by heart because I'm not a rose expert, but I would probably cover them in some mulch for the winter or protect them somehow, because a lot of roses that we grow in Wisconsin aren't always hardy to our winters. So if you don't provide some sort of protection, you know, the crown can die and then your rose won't come back next year. So here at the garden, all of our hybrid tea roses, grandiflora, floribundas that aren't hardy to our winters get mulched in like 2 to 3 feet of mulch for the winter, and then we uncover them in spring. So especially for the first season that those roses are in the ground, I would give them some sort of protection and maybe cage them so the rabbits or voles don't go in there and like girdle them, where they chew the bark off the stems and then your rose dies back anyway. So definitely doable, maybe sooner than later, protect it over winter and make sure it gets sufficient water going into winter before the ground freezes, because then it's less likely to get stressed out and more likely to come back next year.
Lindsay Hendricks, our guest today, horticulture manager at the Green Bay Botanical Garden. Great to have her with us. And you can join in as well. We're getting some good questions here. What about you? Question about your plants. Give a call at 800-642-1234 or email to talk@wpr.org. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Greg emailed to ask when to prune his lilac trees. They're getting a little long in the tooth, but he'd like to try and preserve as many spring blooms as possible.
Ah, that's a good question, because lilacs are one of those trees that blooms on old wood. So typically you do a lot of your winter pruning when things are dormant. But on lilacs, for example, that bloom in spring, you might be removing the blooming wood and then not have it for the next spring. So typically what I like to do or try to do here at the garden is after the lilacs are done blooming, you can see where the spent bloom is. You know, you can deadhead that if you want, but that's actually probably a good time to be doing some of your pruning if you're trying to take back the whole, like the size of your tree in general and like scale it back and make it smaller, like tipping back a little bit. That would be the good time to do that. But if you're looking at taking out like a third or so of the biggest, oldest stems and you want to do more of a rejuvenation prune, that's probably best to do in winter when your plant is dormant, so it doesn't send up a lot of suckers and then you have this big mess the next spring to kind of deal with. So Here at the garden, I kind of do a combination of both. I try to remove spent blooms after it's done blooming and tip things back a little bit, because then your lilac has the whole season to create, you know, new wood, which next year will be considered old wood. So it will set those flower buds, you know, end of summer, early fall. So it might be getting a little late-ish to, you know, do that now. You can try it. Otherwise, I would wait until next spring after the lilac is done blooming, where you can kind of take a little bit more out of it, and you'll see, you know, where your blooms are. You still get to enjoy them in spring, but then it has the rest of the season to kind of grow new wood that will be flowering wood the next year.
Louise in Dodgeville has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Louise.
Hi. I bought a plant this year for the first time for our deck to put in pots, and it's called a popcorn plant, C-A-S-S-I-A, however you pronounce that. So it's really kind of interesting because it like kind of opens its petals in the sun and then it closes its petals in the evening. But I wondered about bringing it indoors for the winter and if it would survive, because I think it's a tropical plant.
Yeah, we actually use the popcorn plant, or like a Senna, Cassia, depending on, you know, your common name and what it's sold as, is a really cool plant. It smells like buttered popcorn, the flowers do. I don't know that we ever overwintered it here in the garden, but it's definitely something that you can try if you want to try growing it again next year and, you know, having a bigger plant that will bloom earlier. So, you know, it's like, looks like it's a zone 9 to 11 plant, so definitely won't, you know, survive our winters. But since they're already in, my suggestion to try, like I said, we haven't done these before, but based off of what we have overwintered successfully, like, since they're already in a pot, you know, before we get a cold snap or a killing frost, I would, you know, pull all the other annuals out that you don't want to keep and then kind of lay off the watering. So it kind of signals, you know, to go dormant. It might drop some of its leaves, not look very happy, but, you know, that's okay. And then as long as you have like either a basement, a nice, cool, dark basement, or like if there's a part in your house that's not going to be like really warm and sunny, you know, you can bring it inside if you have room and just keep it in the pot that it's already in, because then you don't have to disturb that root system. And you can check on it like every couple of weeks, give it a little bit of water if the soil starts drying out, because you basically are like just barely keeping it alive and don't want it to be actively growing. And then in spring, late spring, usually like March, April, you can bring it back outside in your garage so it doesn't get like super cold, but then start watering it and the sunlight will kind of signal for it to start growing again. So that might be the easiest way to do it, especially if it's really big. If you have a lot of supplemental lighting and like a Four Seasons room that's heated where it'll get lots of sun, you could try to keep it growing alive. But my assumption is it will get really big and leggy. I don't know what kind of insect pest it might get, so it might not look very good in the winter. But the easiest way might be just keep it in the pot, bring it inside, lay off the water, kind of let it just hang out for the winter, and then try bringing it back out, bring it back to life in spring and, you know, see what happens. So I would definitely try it and let me know how it goes. So if we ever get those again, we can maybe try saving a couple and have a bigger, cooler plant next year.
Yeah, that sounds great. Louise, give it a shot and let us know how it works out as well. Joe in Ontario, Wisconsin, what's on your mind?
Hey, so I've got a bunch of grapevines that aren't doing very well, and I was wondering about the best way to transplant them, when to transplant them, what I can do to get them to grow and produce. They're upwards of maybe 15 years old, and I've never really gotten any grapes off them. And then I also have some new grapevines that I bought, and I'm wondering what the best type of soil and just, you know, just some any insights that you might have.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that, Larry, do you have any experience growing grapes?
There's a UW Extension publication called Growing Grapes in Wisconsin. And it's a dandy little publication, been around for quite a while. But if you go to the Learning Store, UW Extension Learning Store, and type in Growing Grapes in Wisconsin, or just type in Growing Grapes in Wisconsin, it's probably going to pop up, and you'll get a lot of really good advice on that. If you haven't, you had them 15 years and you haven't done any pruning, for example, the pruning is going to help, could help with your production. It's hort.extension.wisc.edu. Boy, that's a mouthful. hort.extension.wisc.edu, and then type in articles or as well, and it's probably going to pop up, Joe. And I would go to that, because you're getting a lot of really good advice in that publication.
Yeah, I would agree, Larry. That popped up when I was kind of looking too, because I have one grapevine in the cottage and it's usually growing way more than I want it to. So I'm constantly cutting it back, and that's probably why it keeps producing new growth and grapes for me. But if I know one thing, sometimes if, you know, plants are producing fruit or flowers, you know, making sure if it likes full sun, it's getting full sun. If you do decide to transplant them, I would probably wait till like next spring when they're kind of dormant, just start growing, because then they have the whole season to kind of reestablish themselves. But I would definitely check out that article, because it's probably got a lot of really great information in there, depending on your situation at home, you know, to kind of get you growing in the right direction.
There you go, Joe. Thank you very much for calling. Ruth in Chippewa Falls, what's on your mind?
Well, I would like to know why you never hear anything about a basswood tree. Nobody, you don't hear anybody planting a basswood tree, or it's suggested even.
Yeah, basswoods.
Sure.
Ruth's wondering why she doesn't see many basswoods around, or why they're typically not recommended, or at least she hasn't heard of them being recommended.
Okay. Well, I know at the garden, and that's why I'm just checking the common names, because, you know, sometimes common names are very regional and not always that common, depending on where you're at. But, you know, the tilia trees or like the lindens, I don't know why they don't suggest those more. You know, we have a couple like linden trees at the garden, not overly as much, but some people I know can probably think they're a little bit messy because of all the flowers that they have, and they can drop, you know, all those little petals and the seed pods and stuff once they're done. But I know the ones that we have at the garden, if you have Japanese beetles in your areas, they do tend to attract Japanese beetles. And the people that choose to spray for Japanese beetles or treat systemically, the thing with like the tilia family or the basswood family is those trees are typically blooming at the same time as the pollinators are out, the Japanese beetles, the bees and everything. So if you apply a systemic insecticide to that plant, you know, it can affect the pollinators in a negative way. Or if you spray those trees to kill the Japanese beetles, you can also spray, you know, the bees and kill all the good pollinators. So maybe that's why people aren't suggesting it as much, just because of, you know, the invasive pests that really like that tree and having to control it and looking good without, you know, negatively affecting the native wildlife. But I don't know. I think they're kind of a cool tree. They definitely have like fragrance to them when they're blooming. We have a really nice one outside our building that, you know, it smells up the whole parking lot when it's blooming. So,
yeah, there you go, yeah. Ruth. Thank you very much for calling. Lindsay Hendricks, our guest horticulture manager at the Green Bay Botanical Garden. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk. You're listening to Garden Talk. Our guest, Lindsay Hendricks, horticulture manager at the Green Bay Botanical Garden. It's great to have her back. And I just wanted to mention, coming up, we're going to be talking at the top of the hour about how scammers are using artificial intelligence to catch your eye with unusual and fake plants. That'll be at the top of the hour. Right now, Carrie in Janesville, what's on your mind?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. And it's funny, you guys were just talking about the linden tree. I have huge linden trees, beautiful, over my front flower garden. And like you said, all the seeds that come down. My first question is, why some years is there so many more seeds than other years? I mean, last year I hardly had any, and then this year my gardens are just covered. And then my second question is, do these seeds hinder the growth in my garden? Should I clean that out?
Well, that I'm sure, because even like apple trees, fruit trees kind of go through the same thing. Related to the carbon nitrogen cycle of the plants, you know, and typically sometimes it can, you know, depend on the environment and how stressed the tree is. Like sometimes trees, if they're really stressed out, will produce a lot of seeds because they think they're going to die and they want to reproduce. You know, so some years they will do it because of that. Other years, you know, the tree was really happy and healthy and just had a lot of energy stores. So then it will produce a lot of seeds. So, but typically if you have a year where any tree is producing a lot of seeds or fruit, you know, the following year is typically going to be like a little bit lighter, because after the tree uses all that energy to produce the fruit or the seeds, you know, it kind of needs to rebuild its energy stores. So, you know, it kind of depends on that carbon nitrogen cycle going on within the plant, but also can be environmentally related to as well, if it's, you know, stressed out or just getting a lot of nutrients and water. But I mean, it is very annoying as a gardener, either here at the garden or at home, you know, when you have these trees that are dropping all these seeds and then you have to clean them up and then you have to, you know, like weed all the seedlings that come out afterwards. So, you know, I don't think they're necessarily gonna like hinder anything in your garden if they start growing. But if you don't want the seedlings to, you know, growing and then have to weed them out later, you know, definitely trying to clean up as they fall, you know, might be the best way. It's a lot of work up front, but then it saves you from having to pull any weed, little weedy seedlings, you know, that come after the fact. So
there you go, Carrie.
Yeah, it's going to harm anything. It's just a little bit more work no matter which way you do it, I guess, unfortunately.
Right about that. Carrie, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Before we run out of time, I did want to mention the exhibit that you have at the garden. It's called Washed Ashore, and it is an amazing exhibit. Talk about it for us. It's something that everybody ought to see.
Oh, yes, for sure. So Washed Ashore, Art to Save the Sea. We have over 9 different sculptures this year. This is actually the second time we've had the display at the garden. We have, I think, 1 or 2 sculptures the same as the first time. Stanley the Sturgeon, he was actually commissioned the first time he came to the Botanical Garden, and he was made from plastic and trash that was collected from the Great Lakes region. So that's pretty cool. He's specific to, you know, the Great Lakes area. But we actually have this exhibit is only here through September 2nd. So we have about a month left. So if anyone wants to come check it out, you know, make sure you get up here. We're open daily now this time of the year. Admission to the exhibit is included with your admission to the garden. So, you know, guests of all ages will enjoy it. Like a lot of kids really enjoy trying to find the different pieces that are in each display. They each have interpretive signage with them that kind of talks a little bit about, you know, what that sculpture was created with and, you know, all the different products that are inside. But, you know, it really helps to spread awareness of, you know, why it's important to keep our waterways clean and safe for all living things, you know, and basically picking up your trash after yourself. So, you know, you got a lot of really great sculptures. They're all really cool and colorful. You know, everyone seems to enjoy them. So we would, you know, come check us out, open daily, you know, and through September 2nd, then they're going to have to go on to their next home for the next couple months.
Yeah, and just the bright colors and the large size. I mean, these are not small.
No, they are. One of the artists came out and he told us, and one of the interesting things is like all the colors of the sculptures are the natural colors of the trash, the plastic that was found. So nothing is painted to look a different color. It's natural color. And I think the eagle is probably one of my favorites. It's just like so huge. You go up to it and all the details of the feathers, like the big jellyfish that's hanging down by the children's garden off the lodge ceiling is like all the way to the ground. So these things are, you know, like larger than life, but we encourage you to get up close to them so you can view all the different pieces that are in there and kind of, you know, look for the different things. And it's really cool to see everything. And we've got to see a lot of the behind the scenes of, you know, how the sculptures were created. So I think we have links to that on our website too, if you want to get more information of like what goes into the sculptures and why they're so cool. But yeah, larger than life for sure. Kids love them. Adults love them. Everybody loves them.
They are absolutely amazing. And I'm glad you've got them on the site. What's your, and just so we don't forget, the Green Bay Botanical Garden website is...
It is, say it with me slowly, gbbg.org. Kind of a tongue twister. It's basically the Green Bay Botanical Garden.org, but gbbg.org.
Two B's in the middle. You start with a yeah. G, two B's in the middle, and a G at the end.
Yes, it's a GB sandwich.
Okay. Oh, man. Carrie sent us an email. What kind of soil should he use for a cactus?
Ooh. Cactus soil. So you can buy different like soils for cacti and succulents, you know, at most nurseries, greenhouses, anywhere that you go. But typically with cacti, you want something that's going to be really quick draining because those cactus live in deserts where they don't have lots of water, so they don't want to be kept really wet. And a lot, if you use an average like potting soil, there's too much peat and other products in there that are going to hold on to the moisture and your roots are going to rot. So I usually just buy like whatever potting mix, cactus succulent potting mix is at the store for the amount that I need. Typically they're in pretty small bags, but you can get them bigger. But I actually like to add a little bit more sand to my mix and sometimes a little bit of perlite too, just to make the pot, make sure it drains really well, but also a little extra perlite, you know, kind of makes the mixture a little bit lighter so it's not so heavy. I do have a couple of cactus at home that I started from seeds many, many, many years ago, and they're huge and heavy as heck. But I've used the same Miracle-Gro cactus potting mix since I've had them. A little bit of extra sand and perlite in there, and they're doing just fine. So my suggestion with those or any succulents is just go light on the water, especially in wintertime when they're more technically kind of dormant and not actively growing. But if you're going to transplant them, I would suggest doing it before you bring them inside, if they're outside right now for the summer, so they can kind of reestablish themselves before going inside or through winter when the light levels go lower and then they kind of slow down a little bit.
I had one in my lake home that was got to be 12 feet tall. It was amazing. Oh, man. On that heavy note, Lindsay, it's always a pleasure. I hope a lot of people come and see the gardens and see that Washed Ashore exhibit. And again, go back to the website, gbbg.org.
Very good.
Thanks, Lindsay. Really appreciate
it. Thank you, Larry. Have a good one.
We'll look forward to your next visit. Lindsay Hendricks is the horticulture manager at the Green Bay Botanical Garden. Coming up, we're going to talk about AI and plants. That's next. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on WPR News.